Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the last episode of the first season of Formula One Philosophy. It's been a great year together, and we thank you kindly for listening to us for every episode. We have a loyal yet small following, but we appreciate every one of you who likes, subscribes, and leaves comments on our humble podcast. A lot of changes are happening next year, and with that, we have a special announcement from producer Gatsby.
Ladies and gentlemen, esteemed colleagues, and listeners of refined taste, picture me, if you will, as a diminutive yet dashing figure, gracefully navigating the Grand Prix of life, a scene reminiscent of a vintage film, perhaps with Morgan Freeman himself narrating my journey. But alas, it appears that Father Time has been tinkering in the pits, and in his peculiarly charming way, has reminded me that even the most intrepid charioteer must occasionally yield to life's pit stops. Now, while the years have been undeniably kind, and my spectacles tell me that I am still the roguish young whippersnapper I fancy myself to be, it must be confessed that I have reached a juncture. A stage, dear friends, where it is only sporting to consider hanging up my podcasting helmet before someone claims I've grown too vintage for the modern conversation. One must maintain one's dignity, after all, even while discussing the aerodynamics of racing cars or the delightful eccentricities of drivers past. But fear not, for this is not the curtain call of an old thespian. Rather, it is the graceful ballet of an English gentleman opting to leave the stage before a comedic farce ensues. You see, there's a delightful cabalistic dance that occasionally erupts between Nicola and myself, a melee of minds sparring, albeit with a decidedly athletic flair. It has been a lark, a romp even. But I choose peace over potentially needing to burying Nicholas next to my dear friend Stephen, who I must clarify for the sake of insurance, remains delightfully above ground and in good spirits. Conclusively, I thought it rather splendid to step aside while my name can still be mentioned at a cocktail party without the accompanying preamble of, "Poor old Gatsby, he really should have quit whilst ahead." Such is the wisdom that age affords, along with the occasional creak in the knees and an inexplicable fondness for tweed jackets. Therefore, I hand the reins, the microphone, and the cockpit to newer minds who possess the fervour and folly befitting the philosophy of Formula One. Thank you, one and all, for the laughs, the debates, and the memories. I bid you adieu as gracefully as only I can muster, like a gentleman taking leave of a most splendid soiree. Yours in spirited camaraderie, producer Gatsby.
Nice try, producer Gatsby. Trying to resign? Okay, here's the real story, everybody. This week, producer Gatsby had a nice little, like a TED Talk at MIT? I guess a TED would be a TED, doesn't matter. Point is, producer Gatsby was having a talk, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, went on an expletive-laden rant about the Israel-Gaza situation. And now he's canceled, and now he's been fined, and now he's not allowed back at MIT. So I was trying to fire producer Gatsby before he released his resignation. So I'm a little upset about that.
It looks like he beat you to it.
He beat me to it.
I don't know why you let him speak first.
Well, you know, I wanted to see if he would apologize here. I still would have fired him and humiliated him. But I guess he caught wise to what I was about to do. Anyways, with that announcement, I would like to announce producer Cairo for next year. He's been waiting in the wings, and it's his term. And, you know, I told him to give me a nice little blurb about what we can expect from him. And I'll just read his statement. Okay. It's hard to read. You know, cats don't really write that well. Allah is great, and he will vanquish the infidels in the West. Okay, Cairo's fired, too. We need a new producer. You heard it here. We have no more animal producers. I don't know why we thought animal producers would work for a Formula One philosophy podcast.
Who knows? Was that a byproduct of that drunken episode we had?
I think so. Well, Gatsby was sitting there looking at us the entire time, and I thought, let's hire him. That's why you don't make decisions over a lot of whiskey. And Ron Dennis. Ron Dennis would have done what we did.
How did we end up on Ron Dennis?
On that episode, I still don't remember, but it made for good conversation. Mm. It had something to do with Nui and then the blinds or the wallpaper or something like that.
All right, anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us for this season once again. And we hope to end off the season with a bang. But as always, Sean, how was your week?
It was the longest and somehow shortest week I've had in a long time.
It just never felt like the work stopped?
There was too much work to do, not enough hours to do it in, which sounds pretty standard. But then I've hired somebody, so having to get them up to speed. And the boss was in town, so oof. I also had to drop everything and do that.
Oh, man. That's rough. So just constant stress at all times.
It wasn't even stressful. It was just there's physically too much work to be done.
Well, when someone who writes your checks is looking over your shoulder, so to speak, I know he probably wasn't literally doing that, but it's still stressful. Like, you can't make the mistakes or you can't have the leisure like you normally do.
Yeah, it's not even that level of stress because I'm, you know, he actually believes I can do what he's paying me to do.
No.
It's more so he comes in with his bright ideas and... let's just say some of them are a little half-baked.
Should we bleep this part?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody listens to us, Sean, with the million followers that we have, so you need to be careful with comments like that.
Sure.
Yeah. I had a thought this week while I was running around with my head off, like a chicken without its head, for the millionth time, and I thought, people are really just programs. And that these specific programs, they order specific food and specific drinks. And if they don't pay attention to their life and sleepwalk through life, they end up becoming just bits in the matrix.
I believe the current terminology would be NPCs.
Yeah. But it's on like another level. Like NPCs is usually for like political discussion or discourse. This is just like...
what do you think an NPC is?
Oh, I thought it was just someone who just follows the like social norms. You know what I mean? That doesn't think for themselves.
That's accurate, but it stands for non-player character. It's literally pre-programmed bits of code.
Ah, I see. Okay. I usually see that in a political context. So anyway, it's just the point is you're right. And I don't know. It's just I had like a very... deep philosophical thought. Thought I'd bring it up on our philosophy podcast, which we should do more of. We should do more philosophical thoughts and discussions.
It's funny you say that because I've been thinking that as well. And I've been thinking there's an activity we should do in the off season. Maybe we'll record it and try and associate F1 themes and topics to philosophical razors.
Ah, I like that. Okay. Elaborate when we're done this episode.
Okay.
All right. That's a good idea. I was also going to say we should finally delve into the conspiracy theory that Rubens Barrichello affected the entire Formula One. What was it? Rubens Barrichello's crash in 2009 or something? You sent that to me one time.
No, simply his career.
Yeah, his career. There it is.
Rubens Barrichello's career... certain or any event in Rubens Barrichello's career,
hard name,
can have a direct link to ongoing activities today.
Mm.
It was a thread on Reddit basically where somebody said, ask me a question, I will link it back to Rubens.
Mm. And like I said to you that time, let's link it, let's somehow cops corner Britain 2021, relate Rubens Barrichello or anything for that matter. Max winning 19 of 22 races. We should do that one day, too. For every smart idea, there's a dumb idea from Nick. Anyways, Abu Dhabi. Let's hit the ground running. Let's end the season strong. You have our Abu Dhabi predictions?
I do.
Let's start there.
All right. So, Nick, you had Max winning the race.
Hmm.
Lando in second. Charles in third. You got that one.
Mm-hmm.
Lewis in fourth. You got that one as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Yuki in fifth.
Yeah. And that was never happening, but I don't understand why AlphaTauri put him on softs for half the race. Just a silly strategy call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
On my end, I had Norris.
So you got it right?
Yep. Then Oscar.
Hmm.
Which, if it wasn't for Verstappen, that may have been the case.
Yeah.
And then that probably means I would have gotten my third in Carlos as well.
Hmm.
I had Max in fourth and Lewis in fifth.
Hmm.
So I think if Max hadn't done what he did, I would have nailed it.
Yes. Based on qualifying, though, Max messed up his last lap in Q3 and definitely had a couple more tenths there. Not that he would have necessarily gotten pole, but I think he was a lot faster than what was led on in that race. He might have won. It's hard to see it, but like he passes Carlos right away and then is going on with Oscar and fucks it up completely. It has to be said.
Mm-hmm.
And Oscar had the best take on it. Move of a world champion.
Yep.
I want to hear more of that from Oscar. And in moments like that, you should be mad. You should be a little frustrated. It was a bad call by Verstappen. You just slow a little bit more, you would have had a better exit, and you probably would have challenged Oscar by the next corner.
Yep.
That's really the entire race right there, quite frankly, with Abu Dhabi. There's nothing much else to talk about.
Not a whole lot, no.
It's really like our episode's going to be about the ramifications, everything that's occurring after the fact.
Yeah. And I'll say there was a lot of mid-pack battling that went on during the race. A lot on the line, obviously, between Haas and Alpine.
Mm.
We saw Valtteri come together with Magnussen. Right? There was some battling, but all in all, it was nothing.
Yeah, we'll get more into the Haas versus Alpine battle when we go over our constructors' predictions. I think we'll save it for then. Amazing, though, a coincidence. So in 2022, Mick Schumacher and Nicholas Latifi leaving at the end of that race crash into each other. 2024, Valtteri Bottas and Kevin Magnussen leaving at the end of the race crash into each other.
Mm-hmm.
What is it about Abu Dhabi? And instead of finishing your race strong, it seems to bring out the worst. Kimi Raikkonen, engine failure, finishing his season in 2021. His career.
Franco Colapinto, DNF.
Yeah. Do you think he ever comes back?
No.
We talked about it last week, and it's just sad to see everyone went sour on him for the wrong reasons. They were jubilant on him for the wrong reasons and went sour on him for the wrong reasons. If they came to the middle of this kid, they'd realize he has potential. I don't see why V-Carb wouldn't want him next year.
Yeah, it was too much too fast. And then overcompensation, which led to the destruction of those cars and not enough parts.
Hmm. And like we said last week, it's not his fault.
No, it's not.
You don't throw a rookie into that situation when you already have the destructors in the bag almost at that point.
Yeah,
but let's segue to the real talk of Abu Dhabi. I think the main focal point, the Destructors Championship was run away by Perez long ago. And Sergio Perez seems to be the main talking point at the end of Abu Dhabi.
Except I'm pretty sure he's not number one.
What do you think is the number one talking point at the end?
No, the Destructors.
Oh, who ended up being number one?
I want to say it was Alex.
Albon, I thought he came second. Here, let's look this up.
All I know is that Williams took the three of the top four places.
Yeah, Sargeant was bad. He probably would have won if he finished the season. It was Perez.
Yeah, there you go.
By 200,000. Just under 197,000.
I mean, those are estimates because we don't know what these teams actually bill for all the parts. So what's 200,000 between friends?
I think you might have looked and seen, but do you believe who number four is, or do you know who number four is?
call a Pinto.
Call a Pinto's 3, which is not good for 9 races, but you know what? He's a rookie, and like I said, he was going for it in the last couple races, and I like that. Albon was 2. George Russell, everybody seems to forget, is number 4.
So I think your list is different than mine.
Ah.
The one that I saw, at least. But anyway, that's what you get when they're estimates.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah. Lance Stroll, only 9th in this list. That seems like bullshit to me. Maybe your list is better.
No, I believe that because he just puttered around to the back and did fuck all. He didn't actually destroy too much.
Going back to Perez, is he done? It seems to me he has to be.
I want him to be. He's been there for a long time. All right, what's his career? It's over 10 years now.
2011, so 13.
Yeah. He's had his chance to be successful, and he's capitalized a little bit. I think he should have bowed out during the season. That would have let him leave with a little bit of dignity.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's going to come down to a negotiation between lawyers of how much Red Bull's willing to pay Sergio to stay out of it. Right. He has a contract, we know that. Christian Horner came out and said, we offered him a contract after his run of podiums to give him the reassurance and to kind of keep that performance going without the pressure on him. And clearly that didn't work.
It did the opposite.
But what got me is that that's Christian Horner's statement. Clearly it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
So Horner's given up on him. Horner doesn't want him there. What are they going to have to pay? I've heard different figures. I've heard anywhere between 17 and 70 million.
Jeez.
The 70 million is absolutely insane. I don't see why anybody would sign a contract with Sergio for that.
I think that's estimates in terms of the negativity on Red Bull's sponsorship. So they just add it and they say, oh, well, he brings X in sponsorship, so let's add it to what they have to pay him out. I bet you. Because you're right. That's a ridiculous contract, 70 million. That's probably around what Max makes.
Yeah, but that wouldn't be factored into the payout.
Mm.
Because he hasn't contested the season. That money doesn't get paid, right?
Mm.
So, you know, the only way I see it being 70 million is if his contract was for 35 million a year, because it was a 2-year contract.
Yeah.
Which, would you pay him 35 million if you consider that Max gets 50?
No.
35 was the number that the former owner of Red Bull told Horner to pay Ricardo when they were paying Max. That's what Max's astronomical salary was right when Danny announced that he was leaving.
Hmm.
So them paying Sergio that much a handful of years later, I don't know.
No, makes no sense to me. No chance he's making that much, yeah. Especially he won less races than Daniel at that point in a Red Bull. But I don't know, maybe. I would say that's you would buy him out definitely at that point because Max finished with 437 points, and you want to guess how much Sergio ended with?
It was 2-something, wasn't it?
Not even 2, dude. It was 152.
Jesus.
And here's another stat I heard. From Imola on, I couldn't believe this. And remember, I went off on Sergio and Imola. And I said, you can't do that the rest of the season and be on, and not defend Max. I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just saying, like, then it was ridiculous to have a race like that. And you had the entire season to fix it. But from Imola on, he scored, you want to guess how many points?
Less than 20.
Surprisingly, you're not that far off, but 49 points.
Yeah, it's pretty far off.
It's half, yeah. It's about half or half and a bit. But still, like 20 should have been ridiculously low.
Yeah.
And if he scored 100 points in that time, they lose the constructors by, I think, 15 points.
Right.
More respectable. They lost the constructors by almost 70 points, considering Max beat Lando second place by 63.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a Nick stat. This is a stat that I'm the only one who's saying this. If Max scored 19 more points, he would have tripled Sergio's total. Tripled.
Sounds about right.
And Max left a lot of points on the table. Like I said, in Vegas, he probably could have done a lot more. Here's a race where he probably should have done a lot more if he wasn't an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
Austria probably could have held off Lando cleanly for the rest of the laps. He didn't have to lean into him and cause that crash.
Yep.
Max left a lot of points on the table. He easily could have tripled him. At that point, you can't have someone like that. That's Schumacher to Barrichello in 2005. And you say, as much as you, good as you have done, that was hard to say, you got to go. At that point, you got to go. And sometimes the car just doesn't work for somebody. And that seems to be what it is with Perez. It's not that he's lacks talent. I don't want him out of F1, but I definitely want him out of this situation.
He had his chance to go elsewhere in F1.
And definitely should have.
So I think now that's the end of it.
More than likely. And to add to your point of Horner giving up on him, if he's announcing that it's the seat is between Lawson and Tsunoda and not Sergio, that's trouble.
Well, the comment was, if it were to come down to replacing Sergio, it's between Lawson and Tsunoda.
Okay.
So they still haven't agreed.
But it doesn't look good.
No.
I think we know who our pick is. And I texted you this week saying that the AlphaTauri engineers are trying to keep Yuki by saying, oh, well, he has such a good... he gives such good information and development in turn to the engineers. And I think AlphaTauri, if Red Bull is smart, should look at what was just said and view it as a positive for Yuki in the car at Red Bull.
Well, I heard similar from the Red Bull side after the test in Abu Dhabi. The Red Bull engineers were surprised at the quality of the feedback he was giving.
He's a smart kid. You called this one every step of the way, and I'd like to say, happily, I was wrong.
He's improved a lot since the early days. Yeah. So, I think he deserves it. Lawson's got a long way to go.
He's been so lackluster, and something you nailed preseason is that he starts strong and sort of just levels up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we saw in these six races.
Yeah, and I saw a comparison somewhere, but on paper, his performance in the car so far has been equal to Daniel Ricciardo.
There you go.
So if Danny wasn't good enough, why would Lawson be?
Mm-hmm.
Give him another year to get his feet wet.
Yeah, and if he steps up, that's great. But yeah, it's not the Red Bull time. Don't skip him over. Don't make the same mistake Mercedes is making with Antonelli, essentially.
Yes.
Don't throw someone in who's not ready and claim you still want to go for the constructors. Mm-hmm. Now all the pressure is off Antonelli, while at the same time all of it going on. The pressure should be off of him, but now he's going to have to perform at a high level right away.
Yeah.
And that would be the exact same situation with Lawson. What a mistake. Sorry, we should talk about that preseason. I'll save that for preseason. I have a lot of words to say about Antonelli, but I'll keep it for another day. Jack Doohan also had his introductory race in Abu Dhabi.
Probably
talk about him. There's not much to say. It was very, very below average, unfortunately. It's a bad car, and it's his first race, so I'm not going to give up on him just yet, but it's still not the race to show for the quote-unquote most prepared rookie.
Yeah, and that's... I mean, he got out there, he did the race, he didn't crash, he made it to the end. That's it.
Yeah.
And frankly, I think, well, he only finished ahead of Kevin Magnussen, who is in that position because he tangled with Valtteri and then had a bizarre attempt at cutting through the field on softs, which was never going to happen. It was far too early in the race for that to actually do anything for him.
Yeah. We'll save Doohan for next year, too. If there really is a 5-race contract, though, that's being speculated. It's still out there. It's still being circulated, so I don't know.
Well, did you hear Flavio's comment?
No, I didn't.
I'm paraphrasing. I don't remember exactly what it was, but basically he said, we're here to be a top-tier team, And in order to be at the top, we need top-tier talent behind the wheel. And that was a question related to whether or not Doohan has a limit on his races or a limit on performance, something like that, that would cause him to be replaced. So he hasn't said he's not there. He hasn't said he's got a 5-race contract. All he's saying is we need top-tier drivers, and they're willing to do whatever they need to make sure they have it.
Yeah, but then he also says earlier in the season on Formula for Success, I don't care about the driver. I'll make sure the car is good.
Mm-hmm. But if the car can't be good,
blame the driver.
You need the driver to be on top of it.
Yeah, this kind of waffling happened between him and Ricardo Patrese, him and Martin Brundle back in the day, you know, Trulli, Fisichella. He seems to find his driver, localize around his driver, which Gasly is definitely showing he is that driver.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just sort of takes out any problems with the team on the number two. We've seen this a million times. So poor Doohan, but at the same time, I know.
Yeah.
You really got to step up. There's nothing else we can say.
Yep, exactly.
Before we go over and recap our constructors predictions for the year, do you want to talk about Isaac Hadjar?
Yeah. He had an outing for Red Bull in FP1. And just from watching that, he is not ready for Formula One yet.
Go on.
His attitude, the way he behaved behind the wheel, just not what it needs to be. I think he's got an overinflated ego from his success in F2, which wasn't great. He got there because he was consistently scoring good points. But I think he had one or two race wins. He didn't have many.
He had the most.
He had the most. Bortoleto, who ended up winning the championship, only had two, I think.
Yeah, and I'll just look it up now, but yeah, continue talking about it.
Anyway, he was out there in FP1, which these FP1 sessions for young drivers are not glory sessions. They're not go and run as fast as you can and prove you have the pace. It's go out and execute the test program. They're racing at 75%. They're doing constant speed runs. They're doing aero tests, that sort of thing. And all we heard from Isaac Hadjar was complaining about being impeded by other drivers. And there may have been one. I think I recall seeing one that was a little sketchy. But the way he was yelling over the radio about being impeded by drivers when really there was nothing in it. I even recall the Red Bull mechanic saying to him, yeah, head down. Like, with a complete, just get on with it, get your program done attitude. Like, yeah, I don't think he's ready.
Four to the next closest feature race winners was, looks like two, four wins. I agree with you, he's not ready. Because every time there's any type of pressure put on him, which F1 is all pressure, he seems to fold.
Yeah.
He's had the lead a million times in F2 this year. And since his last feature race win at Spa, he scored points 3 times out of a possible nine.
Nine races.
Points, sorry, yeah. The 9 races makes no sense. 2, 4, out of 8. So 3 out of 8.
Right.
He would have won easily had he just scored consistently, which is a big part of F2.
Right.
And stalled off the line too in the final race when he qualified second. Which you've said this before, this is a big deal in F2. That stalling is all on the driver.
Yeah.
Behrman did it in one of the races. I remember making a big deal about it, but yeah. He makes no sense right now. He just doesn't seem to have anything special about him. Bortoleto, I know we talked about before, I'm excited for him, but it's kind of ominous that McLaren gave up on him. But when it mattered, stepped up. So yeah. Do you have anything else to say about Hadjar?
No, that's it.
All right, let's recap the constructors. what we thought the constructors would be this year, because the results are in and McLaren is the champions since the first time since 26 years, 1998.
Yep.
That was hard for me to say for some reason. Congratulations. They totally deserved it. Did either of us predict that they would win?
We did not.
Who did we think would win?
Red Bull.
Both of us?
Both of us.
Yeah, and we can solely blame that on Perez. Should have happened more than likely.
I mean, we can blame it on Perez all we want. Max was nowhere near as dominant this year. We both pretty firmly believed that that was going to continue.
Max's dominance?
Max's dominance, yes.
Yes. We thought this year would be 2025. Something like this would have been 2025, more than likely.
Yeah. But we got a great season out of it.
Yeah. So both of us said Red Bull number one. Who said number two?
I said McLaren number two. You said Ferrari.
Yeah.
So you got Ferrari.
Ferrari was supposed to be a lot better than they were. And they probably threw away the constructors again. Realistically, whereas McLaren had an early rough start, we'll say, Ferrari had a legitimate slump in the middle of the season.
Yeah, they had an upgrade in Spain that went the wrong way. And if that upgrade had worked, they probably would have had it.
Yeah, because remember, after Monaco, it was all sunshine and roses. Yeah, Red Bull was falling apart. Ferrari was catching the groove. Mm-hmm. They were going to run away with it, and no. And does that not speak to the drivers giving information, which we've talked about a million times? It has something to do with it. How do they keep getting it wrong at key moments? At some point, they need to coalesce around a driver who can develop this team forward.
Carlos Sainz.
Yeah, maybe. I'm still the firm believer that he didn't belong there, ever. But the fact that he outshone Charles at times shows how lackluster Charles really is.
Yeah.
So it's not a case they could have coalesced around Carlos Sainz. I think Carlos would have been a good number two.
I'm sorry, I was agreeing with your Charles comment, not the Carlos one.
Okay, that's fair. You think Carlos should be the focal point then? De Ferrari, not Lewis, not Charles?
I think they should have forced Charles out for Lewis. Carlos has been a better performer for them overall the last couple years. Charles may have the pace to put it on pole more regularly, but realistically, his race pace is not great. He had a good race in Abu Dhabi, came from 17th to 3rd. He's a good driver, don't get me wrong, but he's not a champion. And I talked about it, I think, last week or the week before. Fred Vasseur basically said Charles will win when we give him the car to win. So it's coming from the team principal. He's not the driver. That's not what Ferrari needs.
But neither will Carlos. Carlos is the same. Carlos had a comment at the end of Abu Dhabi. He said, I showed I can perform and compete with the best when I have the right car. That's not a good thing to say.
Yeah, I agree that it's a bad statement to make. I don't agree with his comment. I think he did better in... How do I phrase this? He did better in...
Poor hardware.
I don't want to say poorer, but I guess that's the only thing I can say at this point. He did better in poorer hardware than Charles did.
Yeah, when Charles was at Sauber, he was, like you said, very lackluster, below average.
Yeah.
Just flashes of brilliance, whereas Carlos was consistently good at Renault and McLaren.
And when you look at the season as a whole, Ferrari had the third fastest car. The Red Bull was the second fastest car, in my opinion.
That's a good point.
But they didn't have a driver who could capitalize on it. If they had put Carlos Sainz in Red Bull this year, I think they would have had the championship. Max still would have trounced them, right? But we would have had an actual fight between Red Bull and McLaren, and I think that would have come out on top.
You still think McLaren comes out on top, or maybe even Red Bull?
No, I think Red Bull would have come out on top.
Interesting. Yeah. I agree with you. Carlos makes a lot of sense at that team. And to anyone, like Jordan said this week too, that or last two episodes, he said, oh, Max doesn't want Carlos there because he's worried about him. And it's like, That's not true. He trounced them the one time they were together.
Yeah, and I don't think Max worries about anybody, frankly.
So yeah, why don't they? Like, is the friction that bad between them? Because yeah, as you're saying that's the perfect number two to Max.
Yeah.
So I wonder. Carlos is one of the only pure twos left. You know, there's a lot of drivers out there that are just masquerading as ones or really threes who think they belong in Formula One. George Russell, Nico Hülkenberg, Kevin Magnussen, Zhou Guanyu. Valtteri Bottas is a pure number two. He was broken like a wild horse to believe that he was a number two. Probably destroyed his career. If they let him run wild more often, he wouldn't have had such a lackluster time at Alfa Romeo.
Yeah.
He learned to follow orders really well, which you needed to think outside the box there, arguably. Yeah, like Oscar and Lando, I think there's still a verdict on who the real number one is. I'm not completely positive, by the way Oscar finished the season, that he's the future number one of that team. He's still young, though. Still has a lot to prove, a lot of runway left, so I could be wrong. Lando at times seems like he's a number one, but I think he's a two who's too used to being a two masquerading as a one as of right now. He still needs that last step.
I think next year we'll see that come out.
I hope so.
I think Lando is a very fast, very effective racing driver. He has his own struggles he needs to get over, and I think he said it best himself. He thought he was prepared for the fight this year, and he wasn't. So now that he knows what it feels like, he's coming out next year, and he'll do what he needs to.
I hope so, because it'll make for a great season if he does. A lot of this waffling was his fault. Like, we could have had a tighter fight, I think, if he didn't make so many mistakes.
Yeah.
It's a little ridiculous that he says next year's my year. Say I want next year to be my year. I'm going to fight for next year to be my year. Don't say you have it in the bag. There's a little bit of cockiness right now coming out of McLaren.
But does this not fly in the face of what you've been saying all season about you can't leave any room for uncertainty? You need to go out and know that you're the best, Nick.
Don't say it. I never say it. Does Max say it?
Well, he did. Mind you, after the championship was won.
There you go. But I'm of the take, too, that Red Bull has a lot more in the tank still. That we shouldn't underestimate them. I think that's more what I'm saying to McLaren. Like, don't keep your eye off the ball just yet.
Yeah. And Red Bull came in hot, and they looked good. They petered out, and then they were able to fix the car.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me that losing Nui at that point wasn't a huge downside. So anybody who thinks that losing Nui means that Red Bull's going to tumble down the order the next couple of years, I think they're mistaken. I think the systems and people are in place to keep that team where they are. Mm-hmm. And they've shown it by being able to put together a proper car once they realize what the problem was, shows they know what they're doing.
And they have Max.
Yeah. And Mercedes, similar problem. A bad car. They made a mistake. They found where the problem was, but they still couldn't capitalize on what they had, even though they found the problem and knew how to fix it.
Yeah. And that's a problem, I think, a little bit with what we talked about with Wolf. I guess there's not that system like there is with Red Bull in place. There's nothing bigger than anybody at Mercedes. There might be some monkeying around by certain people to fuck it up, or it might just even be the drivers that can't capitalize on it.
Could be.
And definitely George is a problem, and Lewis is getting old. And I think he didn't care after a while. I think after he won at Britain, after working so hard for 2 years, I think he just was like, oh, I'm gone. Why should I give everything to this team? I think that had something to do with it.
Yeah, possibly.
Anyways, next year's going to be a banger. Who did we say? Three? We already said that?
Let's see. No, I had Mercedes three. You had McLaren three. Hmm.
So we both got that wrong, and I definitely underestimated McLaren this year.
Yeah.
Who did we say four?
You had Mercedes four, and you got that.
Mm-hmm.
I had Aston, which is obviously wrong. but I'm surprised I'm only at one off.
Yeah.
I don't know how they kept fifth. I don't even think they really scored more than 4 points in the last four races.
Alonso did. Stroll hasn't scored a point in a while.
Like, it was the last half of the season was absolutely abysmal for them.
They were probably the ninth. They were probably what Alpine was at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
I think both teams just flipped. But Alpine flipped too late. Alpine flipped from Brazil on. If they flipped from
Spa,
yeah, they would have caught them for sure. The pace that they were going.
Which, if you recall, Ocon did okay at Spa.
I think, yeah, he was ninth. You're right. And beat Gasly.
Yeah.
For a while, Ocon was better than Gasly. Gasly really stepped it up in these last five, six races.
Yeah.
Which speaks to something else. You know, like, it's the age-old comment. Would you rather have someone consistent or would you rather have someone with flashes? And I think this year showed you'd rather have Gasly over Hülkenberg. Mm-hmm. You'll get more points when you need it. Maybe it's just lucky. You know what I mean? Maybe it's just lucky, but Nico couldn't get past 7th, 8th, or 6th a couple times. Whereas Gasly was able to get that podium, a 5th,
yeah,
and a 7th when it mattered. And would have got another 7th in what was it? Qatar. Was it Qatar or Vegas where he DNF'd?
Vegas, yeah.
Yeah. He would have been in the upper echelons the last four races. And I think you'd rather just have that flash because it seems to yield you better results. Getting 2 points here and there every now and then isn't going anywhere, which is what Alpine was at the beginning. Anyway, sorry, we went way off topic. Yeah, Aston should have been way worse. I think there was a lot of hype around them to be a lot higher, and they shit the bed.
Yeah.
And we've gone over it a million times. Who finished fifth?
So fifth was Aston, but I had V-Carb in fifth, and you had Alpine.
I was close.
You were close, and you were very bullish at the beginning of the season that they would not be as bad as I thought they would be.
Mm. So you were right about that?
No, you were right about that. You were saying...
Oh, about Aston, you're saying?
No, about Alpine.
Well, yeah, but I got that wrong for most of the season. So just because they turned it around at the end doesn't mean you weren't right. You saw how bad they were at the beginning. You said I was bullish about Alpine.
Yeah, I know what I said. The hesitation is because I don't know why you're trying to give me credit for getting it wrong.
Because you would have got Alpine right, I'm saying, if it weren't for the last four races. So I'm saying it's a wash in a sense. Yeah, I predicted them fifth. They came sixth, but it was lucky. It was but it was a lucky pick by me. It wasn't a good pick by me. Anyways.
Yeah. Anyway, six. This is where I screwed myself, and I had Ferrari as six. You had Aston, and we got Alpine.
Hmm. Well, your hatred of Ferrari knows no bounds.
None.
I might be doing the same with Ferrari next year, too. So.
Seven, I had Williams. Wrong. You had V-Carb, and we got Haas.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Like I said at the beginning, that's a prediction I want to pat myself on the back for. Steiner was an anchor on the neck of that team.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't do anything exceptional this year. They just took the negative away.
Yeah. For eight, I had Alpine. You had Williams. And we got V-Carb.
Hmm.
Nine, I had Sauber. You had Haas. And we got Williams.
What a disappointment.
Yeah. And 10... I had Haas. I had no faith in them whatsoever. You had Sauber for a 10th, and that's what we got. And I'm pretty sure we argued quite a bit about that one.
Well, because I go off on Hülkenberg, so you had to defend him. And, yeah. If Sauber, you stopped developing in mid-2022, what did they expect? Eventually something like this was going to happen. Mm-hmm. Or Alfa Romeo.
The thing is, they stopped developing 2022, but then in the last two races, they brought two upgrades.
With a new director, though. So Binotto's trying to save his job for next year.
That's you making shit up again, but...
Maybe, yeah. I'm just saying, like, maybe because they have a system in place now for the future, they're going to start to do some things.
Yeah, and I think part of that is the fact that it's stabilized a bit. All right, Audi sold part of the team to Qatar. They brought Bonato in. They brought a couple other people in. They've sorted out what that management structure looks like. So, yeah, it makes sense that they've turned it around a bit and realized they have to spend some money. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you there. I don't agree with Bonato trying to save his job for next year. He's got a fucking job next year.
Okay, yeah. That's me poorly phrasing things again. What I'm trying to say is Bonato has the ability to do what he wants to do now.
Yes.
And instead of just continuing to tank, he would rather, you know, move forward and keep his job. Because if he tanks, he risks losing his job. Right? Like if he does nothing, if it starts going worse again, right? Because Seidel was supposed to be part of this project for the next 2 years. So, yeah. So shit happens.
It does, but frankly, I don't know what they expect because everything is invested around Audi. And Audi's not going to be here for another year. And you can't get worse than 10th. Now, if they don't score any points next year, that's a worse result. But we'll see.
I think they're going to score points the first couple of races, especially Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, because they should have this year, and they just couldn't do a pit stop.
That's right. Yeah,
I think is definitely fixed now. Unfortunately, Hülkenberg and Bortoleto will look better than they really are. But yeah, maybe they are that good. We'll see. We'll see what happens next year. I'm not going to give any predictions now. Okay, so. Point is, we didn't do that good in our predictions.
No.
But we can do better next year.
Probably not.
We'll see. I'm going to swing for the fences like I did with my Yuki prediction in Abu Dhabi. I'm going to swing for the fences when we start next season. And I'm going to go for it. And that seems to work pretty well for me for sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay. It's probably best to wrap it up there unless you have anything else you want to talk about.
I guess maybe one or two things on my favorite topic recently.
Mohammed Ben Sulayem.
Sulayem. Yes, good old Benny. Mm-hmm. Where do I start? He's had a couple of statements recently that are just absolutely ridiculous. One of the things that the Drivers Association wanted was to be more transparent and for professional stewards, meaning that the FIA would actually hire dedicated stewards to do that job. Old Benny there came out and said the quiet part out loud, right? We talked about his move to get the ethics committee put under him last week. And we likened that move to Sepp Blatter at FIFA.
Yes.
And doesn't this tool come out and say, it's our money. There's no reason for you to know how we spend it. If you want professional stewards, you pay for them. So this is a guy who has been investigated by the ethics committee, is now making it so that the ethics committee reports to him and he has ultimate control over it, as well as responsibility for closing accounts. So he has final say on what happens with the money and he doesn't have to report to anybody. I don't know about you, Nick, but that sounds like the opposite direction that the generally highly regarded racing governing body strives to be.
Didn't they say more transparency?
The pinnacle of professionalism is what was described by one of the members of the board in a rebuke of what Mohammed Ben Sulayem is trying to do. That same person then turned around and said, I say this knowing very well that when it comes time, the different governing teams will vote in favor of allowing what he wants. And apparently this is a common sentiment where a number of people that lead the groups that vote on these topics disagree with everything that's coming out, but for some reason feel that they need to vote for it. Now, why would that be?
They've been threatened. They've been told you'll lose your money, you'll lose your sponsorship, you won't be part of this organization.
It has to be. I'm not one for conspiracy theories, but this is absolutely ridiculous. So I saw it called out in an article today. I think it's time. I think it's time that F1 breaks away from the FIA. Copy and paste the regulations and make your own governing body.
And they'll have more say on the races that are chosen.
Yes.
Right? And that, which is part of the problem of the Sulayem faction, which they seem to choose money and
that's,
yeah, but like, you know what I mean, they choose what they want, the prestige they want, instead of what the fans want.
Yeah, but F1 is involved in that. That's not an FIA mandate. The FIA gets involved, obviously they have to get involved, but that was always a Bernie thing.
Oh, I have a really good tweet here I'm trying to find about conspiracy theories. Anyways, it's essentially saying it's okay to be a conspiracy theorist, Sean. If you don't think that rich people conspire to keep their power and keep their influence, then you're a moron. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to apologize for this. You don't have to say, oh, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist.
No, I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist in the sense that I sound like I'm putting on a tinfoil hat. It's always good to be skeptical. Skepticism and curiosity are what keeps us driving forward, and that needs to be maintained, and that includes being skeptical of decisions that are being made by authority. I've always believed that. The conspiracy theory part of it, where you think, you know, this and this are connected, so therefore it's got to lead to this. Let's use some logic. But yes, that's what I mean when I say conspiracy theories.
Okay, and you are using logic. Like, there's only one proper solution as to why this is happening, and it's because he's threatened them in some way. Not maybe physically, but in the sense that you'll lose your golden goose.
Yes. Well, shall we bring up a philosophical razor?
Okay, let's start.
So give me a second here.
Sean's razor.
This one is in relation to what we were talking about for conspiracy theories. Skepticism, curiosity versus conspiracy. It's Alder's razor, which is also known as Newton's flaming laser sword. If something cannot be settled by experiment or observation, then it is not worthy of debate. If you cannot prove what you're talking about by either observing it happen or being able to put an experiment to it to prove that it happens, it's not worth debating.
If it's just innuendo or piecing together what people have said and thinking this must be it, it's Alder's razor makes no sense.
It goes hand in hand with the Sagan standard. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
So you're not saying it's fact, you're just saying something's up here, something's fishy.
Yes, and I would say that it can be observed because we're seeing it play out in real time, the grab for power, the voting, the people dissenting from it who are privy to those accusations. I would propose as well Hanlon's razor. Never attribute to malice that which can be adequately explained by stupidity. I don't think this fits in this case.
Yeah, I would say he's more arrogant.
Right. And it's not necessarily malice. I don't even know how to phrase what I'm thinking here. It's basically a straight up power grab.
He's so used to having his own way that when he's being challenged, he's just going to take more power.
Yes.
He comes from a country where he's the man. Like, he gets to do whatever he wants. He's the rich Emirati, right? Like, I'm not shitting on anybody for that. I'm just saying that's what he's used to. That's his culture. And now people are challenging him here with Western European ideals. And he's like, fuck that. I'll just take it. I'll say it. Anything else you want to say about him or any other thoughts you have before we wrap up the season?
I'll just say it again because I feel like I need to. He needs to go.
And I agree. F1 should leave the FIA. That's a good call. there's a lot of things they got to fix. And they, like we've talked about before, the a lot of the Arab Grand Prix, a lot of the American Grand Prix, a lot of the street races, a lot of them aren't good.
That's the Liberty thing now.
Oh, so many heads this Hydra.
We are apparently going to get a Rwanda Grand Prix, though.
That would be cool.
A track built into the hillside.
That would be really cool. They've been talking about F1 in Africa. If there's is F1 in almost every other continent, they might as well put one there, too.
Absolutely. I know, obviously, they've been to South Africa, and there's been a lot of talk about getting it back to South Africa. But I think Jordan and Coulthard did an episode with Jody Scheckter. I think he's the one who was helping with those pushes to get it back to South Africa a few years back. And ultimately, the government and the people don't want it, and the money's not there. Mm. And it becomes a struggle to get the money if you don't have the support of the local government and the people.
Yeah, and on top of that, I don't remember it being that exceptional of a track. You never have like a South African Grand Prix banger, you know what I mean? Whereas this Rwanda in the hillside and not a fucking street track sounds like a good idea. If you're going to have 24 races, let's go around the world.
Yeah, and the track is being designed by Alex Wirtz, who is a former F1 driver.
Mm-hmm.
So, could be good, could be terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. Germans are hit or miss these days with their track selection. Not since Hockenheim have we had a good one out of them. Who was the guy you talked about earlier in the season who redesigned Hockenheim? He redesigned Zandvoort. What was his name?
Yeah, I can't remember right now.
Anyway, I think us ending the season shitting on a German would be part of course for who we are.
There's a joke in there somewhere, Nick.
German Scheisse films? Is that what you want to say, Sean? That's
you said it.
That's not the type of podcast we are. And on that note, thank you, everybody, for a wonderful season. Thank you for putting up with us. Thank you for watching us grow and probably being annoyed at times with the way we talked. We got better as the season went on. Our conversation got more fluid. We got more to the point. I think we did great this year, Sean. We should be very proud of what we did. And we want to, like, once again, thank everybody who listens to us. Because we don't want to do our jobs, and one day we want to get paid a lot of money for doing this. That's the dream.
Sure.
And it'll never happen. Because we're humble. So we'll have to say it'll never happen.
But if you say it'll never happen, Nick.
Wink. Winks don't work if you say wink, right? Yeah.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. For those of you who have put up with us for the whole season, that means a lot to us. It really does. And hopefully we can continue to do this through next season as well.
We love doing this. And like I said, first off, we would have talked about Formula One anyways. Might as well put a microphone in our face.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, I got some solo stuff coming up in January. I think we should take a nice break for a bit though.
I am definitely not doing anything about this until January.
Yeah. In January, I'm going to go over the Steiner files. Like, that was one I was talking about, that all his recent YouTube interviews where he contradicts himself a million times. I want to try and put him to bed one more time. I have a philosophical talk in mind as well. And I will not be shitting on Nico Hülkenberg the entire time. That's how I'm going to grow in 2025. But to everybody out there, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We'll see you on the flip side. You will probably hear us together come February season time, I'm guessing. You might have some solo stuff in you too.
I don't know. We'll see. But definitely pre-season, pre-season testing, maybe around the time they launch the cars.
Yeah. That's probably a good date to circle in the calendar.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Season one is done. Producer Gatsby, if you're listening to this, no, you can't have your job back. Good night, everybody.
Good night.